First responders will soon have access to a new tool for locating survivors of natural disasters. The portable technology detects the heartbeats of people, and for that matter, animals, buried in rubble. John Price is the program manager of the Science and Technology Directorate at Homeland Security. He helped develop this technology and was named one of 33 finalists for this year's Service to America medals. He told me more about this project.
We started a few years ago working with NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab. They're one of the science arms of NASA and developed technologies. They presented to us a technology they developed to go ahead and identify human heartbeats. And we worked with them developing a piece of equipment that would use that technology to scan in disasters, collapsed buildings, rubble piles, places like that, where people may be, you know, two or three levels down in a collapsed building and nobody knows they're there, but we can find them through their detection of their heartbeat and their respirations.
It sounds almost like a stethoscope or something.
It does. It uses microwave radar to go ahead and pull the micro movements of the chest wall in that's caused by the beating heart and respirations. And that movement is detected, compared, determine whether it is human or an animal. And that's what part of the key is, because you're not looking for animals that may be rummaging through the debris, but you want the live humans who also may be unconscious. And that's also critical, because a lot of the technologies we have today are based upon things that the person has to be kind of awake and alert to respond. In this case, they do not have to be.
And so it sounds like an apparatus. What does it consist of in terms of pieces and technologies?
It uses basically sensors and microwave radar that actually sends out a pulse that then bounces back from both the rubble, which is non-moving, along with the person that's trapped in the rubble, from the movements of that are caused by the beating heart and the respirations. It pulls that back, uses software and other analytical tools to go ahead and compare that signal, remove the unwanted pieces, and determine whether there's a live human in there, and then lets the operator know whether there are one, two, or more people who are trapped in that rubble pile.
And is this bigger than a bread box or something someone carries on their box? What does it look like?
It's a small box. It's in what they call a Pelican box, which is a small suitcase. So about the size that you would actually take on an airplane. It's designed to fit within an overhead compartment of an aircraft, so when these people can be flown or travel places, they can take this with them. It has batteries in it. It has a pretty much self-contained, and then the system uses a little tablet computer to actually receive the information from the box that says what it's found.
And you had a chance to test it and found that it helped.
Yeah, we actually, a couple weeks ago during the Nepal earthquake, one of the companies, actually we have two companies that are producing it now, just started producing it, where it happened to be over in the Middle East, and they had two of them with them based on our design. It actually was our design. The person was able to get into Nepal, meet up with the local Fairfax team here, work with them for a few days, and then set off for the north part of the country, which is where the epicenter, most of the disaster, or actually the collapsed buildings and buried people were. Worked a little bit with the Chinese, the Netherlands, and the Belgian teams, and actually identified four people who were buried in rubble that had previously been unknown, and were able to save their lives.
And it was pretty thick material that this device is able to listen through, it looks like.
It'll actually penetrate from a standoff position, which is key, 50 to 100 feet standoff from the rubble, because if there's a building that's in a process of further collapsing, you don't want to be next to it. It'll actually penetrate 30 to 50 feet inside the rubble. So it's actually does a very, very deep scan, and it's very accurate. Again, it did identify those. This was the first use of the equipment in a real disaster. Besides our testing and using it in simulated, this is the first real disaster it's ever been in, and again, it was successful on its first time out.
And you say it can distinguish between people and non-human things that have beating hearts and so forth. Sounds like there's a lot of agricultural, military, many uses for a device like this.
Yeah, anything that you would possibly be able to need to identify somebody, you know, identify a heartbeat. It's based upon the normal beating of the heart, and it can be set to different, you know, this happens to be set up to run a human heart within a certain parameters. Can be also adjusted for animals, and it'll pick up, because dogs tend to have this. I tested my own dog, actually. Dogs have a very similar heartbeat, but their respirations are very much faster. So I was able to differentiate. I have a large German Shepherd, and it differentiated me from my dog standing next to each other.
So it's an intelligent device. And what about DOD for soldiers that might be lost in destructive situations?
That can be used for that. That's something that they're looking at also. It has a lot of, again, we're looking at it primarily for the life-saving aspects, and it's wide open when it can be used for FEMA, which is part of DHS where I work. They actually oversee the Urban Search and Rescue Program. We work with their head offices and the teams here and in Indianapolis and in Virginia Beach and other places around the country to go ahead and refine in how it needs to work, look, feel, to get their feel for it. But this is actually the first use case that we came up with, but it's wide open what it can be used for in the future.
John Price is a program manager with the Science and Technology Directorate at Homeland Security and a nominee for a SAMMY's medal this year. And tell us about the program aspects of this. You worked with NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Sounds like an interagency effort here.
This, what I think was really the key to it. They have, I want to call them the big brains, or, you know, they're the space rocket scientists, and they have an extremely large group of highly intelligent and educated people that are just waiting to be tapped into and uses for, in this case, terrestrial use. They are big into the deep space sensing, you know, working to Mars. In this case, we're able to work with them on finding, you know, Earth uses for this equipment, and I'm really hoping in the future we'll be able to make greater use of them and other similar laboratories because they have great technologies and great, great people to work with.
And is this a one-of device, or can it be mass-produced in some manner?
We're looking at having it mass-produced. We have two licensees now. The first one is a company, the one that took it to Nepal, is a company called R4 out of Eatontown, New Jersey. We have another one called Spec Ops Groups out of Tampa, Florida. And others are welcome to get a license from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory to produce it. But you know, I'd like to see one on every, and especially in hurricane and tornado-prone areas, where also earthquake areas, you could have one of these sitting on a fire truck. The latest one part we've come up with is actually this scans a large area and tells you how many live heartbeats detected. The version we've just completed, and we haven't really got much testing into it yet, actually does a locator. So it actually tends to pinpoint within a certain range where those heartbeats are. And we got that idea from the case where in Moore, Oklahoma, where the school collapsed and the first people on scene for the first 12 hours was a local fire company with, you know, two or three people and an engine. And it's nice to know there's live people in a large structure, but when you only have two or three people responding for a while, they need to know a little bit more about where those people are. And that's what we've come up with. So you could have these on fire trucks, rescue vehicles, things like that.
So it could be as common at some point as the defibrillator.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And tell us about you a little bit. How did you get interested in this particular type of project? And what are some of the other things you've worked on so far?
I've been in the actually in the federal government almost 40 years now, just turned 39. I came to DHS in the beginning. And, you know, I've seen in the past, I've done firefighting, I've been in paramedic, done law enforcement. So I've got a large scale area that I've seen in the first responder world. And so when I see technologies, I can actually look at that and say, yeah, this would be really good for a particular response or use in the field if it could do these certain things. And then I go out and find other people in those areas that can help me confirm what my initial suspicion is. And that's been really good to work with. There's some great people in FEMA and in DHS and out in the different agencies to work with have really helped this thing come along.
So it sounds like one of the lessons learned is that field experience, either personally or getting it from people that do have it, is really important to what you develop next.
Yes, it's critical to have that kind of ability to look, you know, have that field experience, know who to talk to, what you're looking at, and how it can be used. Because without that, you know, it's too easy to look at a bunch of technologies that end up not being useful in the field.
And what's your next project?
I'm working actually in the area of, I've done a lot of work in the past in search and rescue, and we're working on a first person on scene responder system, basically for use by the first police officer, first fire engine on the scene of a lost child, a dementia patient, Alzheimer's patient, that would give them a lot of support as what's the first thing you do when you get a call for a lost person, and then where do you start initially looking, and because certain characteristics of people that are lost, they tend to do certain things like go towards water or go to different areas. And the faster you can actually get out there and look and find them, the better chance you'll be able to get a hold of them, bring them back safely. We just rolled out the first part of that, some behavioral software that allows them to decide, okay, where do I look if I have a lost child or an Alzheimer's patient? And the next version will be a full-blown software program that you'll be able to have in a police car or fire truck that actually could get key in all the different information, would actually give you mapping and tell you where to really start looking for that person.